Hey Headlampers, welcome to the Headlamp Hour. I'm your host Nate Jukes, father of five, actuary by day, and a trail runner before sunrise. On this episode of the Headlamp Hour, we talk with Chris Morrison, a father, husband, trail runner, and content creator. We talk about how he grew up in Alaska, met his wife Ashley there, and how later they made the drastic move to Phoenix, Arizona. We discuss how he got into trail running as well as how he grew his Instagram following by posting authentic, funny, and relatable running content. We discuss the amazing story of how he got a nomination for Ultra Signup's Best Pacer of 2023. And finally, we talk about being a stay-at-home dad and how he logs tons of stroller miles. All right, Chris Morrison, welcome to the Headlamp Hour.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm super excited to have you tonight. I'm so excited to talk to you. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. So the opening question is, what roles define your identity and shape who you are as Chris Morrison?
The top three would be, number one would be father, husband, and then I'd say runner third.
Okay. Yeah. And it seemed like you were pretty intentional about the order of those things. Is there a particular reason why you put them in that order?
Being a father and family is just the most important thing to me. So that's always number one above everything else.
Yeah. Well, that makes perfect sense. I can definitely, relate to that. And I think a lot of our listeners can too. And that's a lot of what this whole podcast is about, the Headlamp Hour, you know, juggling fatherhood, parenthood, work and other things as we are also trail runners and love to get out there and get on the trails. So that fits perfectly. All right. Yeah. I just wanted to start out the typical question, like, where are you from? I know you're based in Phoenix right now. Have you lived in Phoenix forever? How'd you get there?
No, I have not lived here forever. Yeah. I'm in Phoenix. We moved here. When I say we, I mean my wife, fiance at the time, in May of 2016. I was actually raised in Alaska. So I lived there for, yeah. So I was 31 when we moved here. The reason we moved here, her parents had moved here. And so Ashley and I, my wife Ashley, we met in Alaska. She's not from Alaska. She grew up in like the Salt Lake City area. And she was supposed to be up there temporarily for a couple of years. We met, she ended up staying, I think, like 5 years. And then when we got engaged, it was like, okay, where are we going to go settle down? Because she didn't want to stay in Alaska. I was ready to go do something different. She's really close to her parents. So her parents had moved from Salt Lake City to Phoenix while she was living in Alaska. They told us, hey, you guys want to come here? Like, you can stay with us until you get jobs and a place to stay. So we both put in notice at our jobs, put the condo that I had there up for rent. And within like a month, month and a half of making that decision to move, we were down here with no jobs, no apartment, no house, nothing. We kind of figured we didn't have kids at the time. You know, we didn't have anything really tying us there. My family's still there, but we didn't know how many chances we'd get in life to just up and go do something new. So we took advantage of the opportunity. And we moved here in May when it was like already 100 degrees. And I don't think I'd been in anything over 80 degrees in my whole life. So it was definitely a shock. But I think I'm somewhat used to it now.
So you were born and raised in Alaska then?
Yeah, I mean, I was born in Washington, but my folks moved back up to Alaska when I was like one. So for all intents and purposes, yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, that is quite the move from Alaska to Phoenix. But yeah, that's totally interesting. That's really cool. So you get there, you come to Phoenix, you're living with your in-laws for a little bit. And then what were you doing in Alaska for work?
You and your wife, and then how did you find jobs there in Phoenix?
So I worked in distribution sales. So specifically for like electrical wholesale distribution. So I sold electrical material to like the contractors, to the military, to the oil field. If they were building a commercial building, if they're building an oil rig, any electrical supplies that those people needed, I was supplying that to the end user. So it's kind of like the manufacturer who makes all of the product. I'm the middleman who's then selling it to the end user locally. My wife was doing the same thing. We worked together. That's where we met.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
And then so then coming down here, we just with that experience found jobs within the same industry, a little bit different. She works for a sales agency here that's like a manufacturer's representative. And then I was working with manufacturers, as opposed to being that middleman. I was working on the manufacturer side. I say was because I left that shortly after my son was born, to be a stay-at-home dad for the time being, which is what I'm doing now.
Oh, really? Okay. So you're a full-time stay-at-home dad, and then your wife still works in that industry, or what does she do?
Yeah, so she still does the same thing. So when our son was born 2.5 years ago, we were both working like the 9 to 5. And it was just after the maternity leave was up, it's like, what are we gonna put this little baby into daycare and spend a lot of money? Daycare is not
Right.
cheap. Or is one of us gonna stay home so that we can actually be the ones at home raising our child? And she made more money than me, so it made more sense that she would stay at work, and I would stay at home. And I did do, or still do from time to time, but I was doing it more consistently. I was going and doing like, this was hard for me to swallow ego-wise for a while, but I was doing like food delivery in the evenings. So like she'd go to work all day, I'd be at home with my son. She'd come home, I'd go out for 3 or 4 hours and do that. Just to make enough money that we didn't have to change anything about our lifestyle. You know, we didn't have to like cut anything out or really redo our budget too much, just to supplement some of that income that was lost with me staying home. And it's easy doing that type of work because it's super flexible. You can kind of work when you want to, when you don't want to. So when having a kid, that's always nice.
Wow, so that's really cool. Yeah, I didn't know that. And so you're doing like DoorDash or something like that then?
Yeah,
Awesome.
exactly.
That's
Yeah,
cool.
doing it less so now. But I was doing it, you know, like 20 hours a week, you know, just go out in the evenings Monday through Friday. We still have our weekends together, but yeah, we would kind of tag out at, you know, 5:30 p.m., 6 p.m. and I'd head out and then she'd be home with our son during the day or during the evening.
That's really cool. I think that takes a lot of courage and, like you said, kind of humility to maybe take a job like that when before you're presumably making more money doing something, you know, like a big boy job or whatever. Like, so I don't know how to ask this. It's a little awkward, but just talk about that. Like, what was that feeling like when you're not the main breadwinner anymore and your wife is? 'Cause, you know, like, you know, in our society, it's usually the man who goes out and brings home the bacon, but you know, you got to do what you got to do. So.
Yeah, it was really tough, to be a stay-at-home dad and then to be doing something that like not to knock anybody who does that, but like it's such a basic entry-level job. I mean, it doesn't take much brain power or skills to pick up someone's Taco Bell and go drive 3 miles down the road and deliver it to them. So, you know, there was a lot of positive reinforcement from my wife, constantly letting me know, like, hey, you staying home with our son and taking care of him and being there and bonding with him is like not a small deal. That's a really important job too, even though there's not money coming in from you doing that. that is really a really important responsibility within our family. And I would constantly remind myself, I still do. I'm 30. I just turned 39. I've got a lot of time left to work, and I don't think I'm ever going to look back at this 2 years, or it might be longer now because we just had another son, may say it's 4 years, and regret having that time with my young children and be like, man, I really wish I was sitting in my cubicle that whole time, or taking customers out to dinner. Like, I know I'm never going to regret it. So just try to remind myself of that and embrace this like opportunity I have that a lot of people don't have. A lot of people can't afford to say, hey, one of us still just quit our jobs and stay home. Some a lot of families, I would assume both parents need to be working to make ends meet. So just remind myself of that, being that I'm fortunate and I'm grateful to that we have that option. And then it became a lot, I mean, I had fun with it. It was flexible. I'd throw in a podcast, drive around, listen to a podcast, deliver food, enjoyed the stress-freeness of it all.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think that's such a good perspective. And obviously, like you said, just shows a lot of humility. And like you said as well, it's while you're not quote unquote making money as a stay-at-home dad, you're providing obviously something much more. And it's a awesome opportunity that you do get to stay home and spend those precious, nurturing years with your young children. So you have a 2-year-old and just a couple month old, right? Both boys.
We have a boy that's 2 and a half, pretty much, and then we have another son who's going to be 5 weeks old tomorrow, so
Wow.
he's fresh out the oven.
Gotcha. So the question, is how are you sleeping? How is the baby sleeping? How's your wife sleeping? How's that going?
It's been going great, especially in comparison to like our first son. Like our oldest son was not a good sleeper. I spent so many nights like walking loops around the kitchen, living room. I remember just being up all night and then trying to sleep during the day when he was sleeping. But and so I was braced for that. That's what I just assumed it would be like this time around. Our newest son so far, knock on wood, has been awesome. He sleeps pretty much through the night. I mean, he wakes up, he eats, he goes back to sleep. My wife obviously is getting up a little more than me because she's doing the feeding, but really hasn't impacted my sleep a whole lot. The only other factor is my oldest son, I think, has a little bit of not necessarily jealousy, but maybe feeling like he's going to miss out on something. So he's been finding his way into our bedroom, every other night. So you got a 2-year-old in there at 1 in the morning kicking around. So that's a little bit of a disturbance, but it's all good. It's been much easier than it was with the first.
That's so funny. Yeah. I have 5 kids and every one of them has been different as far as their ability to sleep through the night and when that starts to happen. And with this last one, he just seems to be taking a lot longer with everything. I mean, he's 18 months now, but he took a while to sleep through the night. But yeah, that's interesting. And I hope that your newborn there, 5 weeks old, continues to sleep through the night
Yeah,
for my
me
sake.
too.
That's good. Yeah, and I can also relate to the older sibling jealousy or just the change in dynamic for him, what he's going through, and how that kind of changes the relationship with, his parents now that he has a little brother. So do you think he will be or has shown signs of being a good big brother, or is he show any like kind of like resentment towards the newborn or anything like that? What's that been like?
It's definitely been mostly positive. I was, in fact, some of the like m maybe some of the jealousy or some of these things have just popped up maybe in this last like week or two. But initially, when we brought our baby home, our son wanted to hold him immediately and was, patting his head and said his name like immediately. And the baby started crying and he's like, "It's okay, it's okay." He's really sweet to him most of the time. He does not know how to love gently. So, he wants to lay on him, he wants to poke him, in the cheek, or whatever, especially when he's sleeping. But most of it's been sweet. And the jealousy stuff that I talk about is more like today I've got the baby in the carrier. Well, my 2-year-old wants me to pick him up and hold him at the same time, that kind of stuff. But that's even only just been recently. For the most part, he's been really sweet with them, which we didn't know what to expect. We'd heard sometimes there can be some resentment or some jealousy, but it's been pretty mild so far.
That's awesome. That's good. Well, yeah, again, with experience has been with my kids, sometimes we can leave the baby just like chilling on the floor and not worry about it. But other times, yeah, we have to kind of protect it from its older siblings from kicking them or tackling them or whatever. So
All right.
that's fun. Well, cool. Well, I want to also kind of get into your background. Obviously, this is a trail running podcast, as well as kind of a mix of whatever people have going on in their lives with trail running podcasts. But how did you get into trail running? I understand you had a very interesting story of that. So if you don't mind sharing that.
I started running in like 2012, after completing my first rehab for like alcoholism, alcohol abuse, whatever you want to call it. I completed that program and I had like some extra time on my hands, and I think more than anything, I wanted to like achieve something that I was proud of. So I signed up for a half marathon in that spring, and I raced it that summer, and I had no running experience prior. I'm not even really sure how I came upon the idea of a half marathon. I think it was just seemed like it was something easy to get into, like gear wise and stuff like that. And so I started that. I did the race. It was a road race. I did road races up until like 2018, I think, was the last time I did a road race. But I'd gotten kind of like burnt out on it, like just doing like half marathon and marathon distances, because it was very much so. And this is just was just me putting this pressure on it, like performance based. It was all performance based, which for me is silly, because it's not like I'm winning these races, I'm getting on the podium at these races. Like, nobody cares if I run a half marathon in 1 hour and 45 minutes or 1 hour and 40 minutes, except for me. But I would get upset and I'd get like frustrated and angry if I didn't like PR every race, and it just wasn't fun anymore. And it was I wasn't really sure what the point of it was anymore. So having moved to Phoenix, a little bit before that, we were living in an apartment really close to South Mountain, which is where I still go and do most of my trail running. I noticed other runners out there that were, wearing these hydration vests and were out there trail running, and because we'd go out there and go hiking. I started hearing about ultra marathons on podcasts. I mean, specifically Rogan's podcast. He would have like Courtney DeWalter on. He'd have like Cameron Haynes, David Goggins, and so it put that on my radar that was even a thing. I didn't even know ultra marathons were a thing. I didn't even really know that much about trail running. I thought road running was pretty much just all on the road. And so by going kind of like on social media and starting to follow other trail runners, and then noticing, oh, hey, there's some like local trail runners that train right here at South Mountain, watching like YouTube videos, some of the documentaries, like some of the Billy Yang documentaries. It just more and more piqued my interest, and it looked to me like it was more than racing. It was more than just like running this race. It was like an adventure, and it was even maybe more of a emotional or spiritual pursuit than necessarily a running pursuit for some of these people. And it just intrigued me on so many levels. So I signed up. Now that was probably, like I said, I don't know for sure, 2018, 2019, that it kind of came on my radar. I didn't actually run an ultra marathon until March of 2021. So mentioning, rehab, even after completing that, there was still, I was still going on and off with drinking. So even though in like probably around that time frame that I found out about ultramarathons, I knew that was something I wanted to do. I even signed up for some, but I never made it to the start line of, because I couldn't like keep it together long enough to like properly prepare and train for one. So it wasn't until 2021 that I actually put together like a, I think a 3 month training block and like ran my first 50K.
Interesting. So, yeah, there's so many things in there that I think
That's a
are
lot.
really
Yeah.
incredible. But like especially, road running, how it's a lot about time, even though each course is different, it's all on the road and hopefully relatively flat. And so you are more focused on your pace and your time. And I like how you said, the trails were more about adventure and that piqued your interest. You were saying you had signed up for some ultras but never
Yeah.
made it to start line. What kind of switch flipped in you to be able to actually put it together and come up with a training block and commit to that first one that you actually completed, started and completed?
I mean, I guess there was a switch. I mean, part of it is I'm just, that had been a pattern, not showing up to races, but a pattern for a long time of like being healthy and being sober and training and running races, and then having periods where I wasn't doing that, where I was drinking and not doing much of anything else. But the one thing that stayed consistent through all of that is like I always came back to what I was wanting to do and like tried again. So part of it was just a never giving up on the dream, but a part of it, and probably not even really consciously of it at the time, but when I started training for the ultra that I actually showed up to and finished, the first one was probably right after finding out that my wife was pregnant with our son. That was a big motivator to get it together, more than I had in the past. No more of this like, okay, you got 6 months of sobriety and you go back out. Like you really need to like hold it together. And because I think my wife was, yeah, she was like, I think 5 months pregnant when I finished that race. So we probably had just found out about our son right when I started training for that one.
Yeah.
So that was definitely a reason for me to keep it together and keep my sobriety together, which as long as I'm doing that, the being disciplined and the showing up and the training and the consistency with training, I'll do that. I love to do that. It's I've got to just be sober and in the right state of mind to do that.
Well, I just like appreciate that so much. I admire you so much for being open and kind of real about how, your progress through, sobriety hasn't been linear per se. It sounds like there's been a lot of ups and downs. And one of the major ups, the impetus was finding out that you're going to be a father soon. There's, nothing like parenthood to kind of make you grow up. So yeah, I guess I just want to say that's thank you for your openness and honesty about that.
Yeah, of course. I don't touch. I don't go too deep on like the sobriety and the recovery stuff. Well, I guess online, on social media, I do touch on it here and there. I don't. I'm always leery of having that be the thing that defines me more than anything else. Like I want to. It defined me a lot of my life. The drinking part did, and so I don't always want the recovery thing to be like this new overarching thing that defines me. But I do bring it up here and there, and I often will bring up the fact that I went to rehab in 2012 because I get asked that a lot. I get asked the question a lot of like, how'd you get started running? And that is part of the story, well, I went to rehab, and when I came out, I did this. And I think an assumption is made often that, like you said, it's just been this linear, and I just got sober and became an ultra runner, and everything was great, and it's just taken off from there. And it absolutely was ups and downs, and struggles, and so I don't ever want to be misleading with that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I like how, and maybe this leads into kind of the next topic I wanted to get into. But yeah, like sharing enough to try to be inspiring to people, but also not trying to glamorize it or sugarcoat it, because that's not authentic. And so that's really, I think that's again admirable of you. So I wanted to switch gears here and talk about your kind of life on Instagram. So you have a pretty decent following on Instagram. That's how I found you. I just started following, trail runners that I knew of, and then, lo and behold, your stuff started popping up on my feed, and I followed you. I guess I want to first ask you the question: what do you think of the term like influencer? And do you define yourself as an influencer? What's your relationship with that term?
I don't know if I would. I don't know if I'd call myself an influencer. I don't think it's like a dirty word, but I think to me, when I think of an influencer, it's like, hey, buy this granola bar, buy these shoes. It's more you're trying to influence people to maybe like buy a product or something like that, which I'm usually not doing that. I don't know if I guess I had to call myself anything. It'd be more like, I don't know, content creator. I'm not, I am trying to influence people, but I'm trying to influence people to like go out and run or trail run or be active or, not always, not necessarily trying to influence people too much, to like go buy the newest Lululemon shorts.
I love that answer. That's good. So I guess how did you get started with that? Was that like an intentional process of posting and trying to kind of grow a following, or did it just kind of happen naturally? Like, at what point did that kind of take off?
It was intentional. I started trying to build it up. So my Instagram account as of like August 2021 was like a couple hundred people, and it was just my personal Instagram account. It was my family and friends, and I'd post some running stuff on there, but I'd also post kids or just whatever what I was doing. And that was right about the time that we decided I was going to stay home with my son. And I had done one ultra. I was training for the next one. And I knew, as much as I knew before that running was something I really loved, I knew that like the trail running and the ultra marathon world was going to be something that I was probably going to be doing for like the long-term future, or as long as I can. And so I had an idea, and it was a shot in the dark kind of, but I thought, well, I'm doing this running thing, I'm doing this ultra thing, I'm gonna be doing this for a long time. The only way I'm gonna get any type of notoriety is probably going to be by having some type of, social media presence or being, I don't know, a character, for lack of a better word. Like, I'm not going to be some elite runner. I'm not going to be impressing anybody with my athletic prowess. And I had the idea also that now that I've left this line of work that I'd done for a long time, but wasn't necessarily something that I loved to do, this could be this time home now with my kids, this break could be the opportunity for me to do something totally different and maybe do something within the running world and within the trail and ultra world. And I didn't know what that was going to be, and I still it's starting to take shape now what it's going to be. But I knew if I could garner some attention and build an audience, and I don't mean for that to sound like this objective term, like they're my audience or whatever, but if I could grow this account, there had to be some opportunities that were going to come along with that. So I started posting every day, and I started interacting with other accounts, and like not just interacting with other accounts as like a transactional thing, like genuinely finding other accounts that I liked, that I followed, authentically interacting with them, posting every day. And so that was August 2021. So by April of this year, I think I had gotten it up to like a couple thousand followers. And since then, I've seen like quite a bit of growth since then. It's up to like, I don't know, I think I'm closing in on like maybe like 18,000.
Yep.
And I just the thing that kind of changed it was like I started posting more authentically to me, so like having more fun with it, cracking jokes, not taking myself too seriously, allowing myself to like talk to the camera. I think people will connect with personalities more than like somebody just running with like a David Goggins voiceover over the top. And so I just started being trying to be more like just uniquely, authentically me online. And that's when I've seen it really kind of take a pretty big uptick over this last half of this year.
That's really cool. Was it scary to start? Did you have like the typical imposter syndrome? What was that like when you were starting out?
It wasn't really scary because like nobody was seeing it, and so I posted pretty generic safe stuff to start with, right? Like I would just post my what I did that day, what my run was. I would post, I think Reels had just started to become a thing when I started trying to like actively grow my account, and I was doing the same thing I just made fun of. It would be a video of me running, and I'd put some motivational soundbite over it that was, just not very personal,
Yeah.
and but it was safe, I've had scarier moments as it's gotten larger, and I know more people are seeing it, and I'm actually talking to the camera and maybe showing my personality more, or sometimes some more personal things, or even some more vulnerable things lately. That part can be more scary, I think, now than it was starting it up. But I think you have to put yourself out there in order for it to really to have an impact, it seems like.
Yeah, you talked about authenticity and wanting to, be yourself. So is that was that kind of the impetus or the motivation that you use to kind of or that you continue to use to get over some of those more quote unquote scary posts that you do?
Yeah, I think I just think I don't want to limit myself. If I feel like there's something I want to post and I want to say and I really like believe in it, that I'm going to post it. Like whether it's like, because sometimes it's just like, ooh, this is just different than what I normally do. Are people going to like this?
Yeah.
But sticking with the theme of I'm trying to just be more of myself and tell my story online. I just do it even if I'm nervous.
Yeah. That's cool. That's again something that takes a lot of courage, and I'm sure it comes a little bit easier with experience and doing it over and over again.
For sure.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you as well about some of your reels that are more comical. Those are the ones that I tend to enjoy a lot. Like one of your reels from yesterday, I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago. It was point of view, trying to leave the house for a run, and you've
Yeah.
got the kid in, you've got your 2.5-year-old in the stroller on the porch, and you've got circus music playing, and you're going into the house back and forth for different
Yeah.
things, for your sunglasses, for a sippy cup for your kid, and then lastly you forgot your running shoes, and you go in and put on your running shoes, and finally you're ready to go out on a run. How do you come up with an idea like that, of a funny reel or a post? Like what's kind of the spark for that kind of thing?
I'll just you what I'm doing now, what I've been doing lately is I'll just pull from real life. That's what happens every time I try to leave. I run back into the house once, twice, three times. And I'm not always like in the moment, I'm not always able to like, oh, let me make a reel about this. But I have a list now. Just in my notes on my phone. So when an idea comes to me, I just type it in there, trying to
Okay.
leave the house. So when I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna make a reel or make the content for the day, what am I gonna make? Well, I can open up this list and I got 50 ideas. And I look back at some of the ideas and I'm like, that's so stupid. Why did you even write that down? But some of them still make me chuckle, so then I'll make them. But yeah, just pulling from those real life moments. And usually what I find is a lot of people can relate to those. You'll get, oh man, I do the same thing. Oh, I usually forget my headphones. And so it's fun because it's me being me, but I'm not so special that like all these other people can't relate to the same silly stuff.
And I guess maybe just a kind of a deeper question on this, like why are those things funny to us as human beings? Like why does that trigger like the our funny bone when we see something that's relatable and something we've done too? Like, do you have any insights on that?
That's a great question. I think it just is, I think it is relating to another human being. And I think laughing at yourself, at least for me, a lot of these reels I make are me making fun of myself. And I think maybe there's a maybe there's a freeness, for lack of a better word, of like having a moment of like not taking yourself so seriously. Like we all have busy, hectic, crazy lives, a lot of responsibility, a lot of pressure. And I think it's really easy to get caught up in that and to take everything so seriously. So when you can have a moment where you can look at yourself and maybe have a laugh at yourself and just like take some of that edge off or cut that tension a little bit, and maybe that's because it's being mirrored back to you and somebody else. You're seeing somebody online and oh man, I do the same thing, and just have a chuckle at yourself. Yeah, I think maybe it gives you a chance to not take yourself so seriously for a moment, and that's probably a relief for a lot of people.
That's really cool. I think that's really insightful. I think things are funny because they're true a lot of the time, and sometimes it's not apparent that they're true. And then when someone brings that to light, then it's like insightful and funny at the same time. And like you said, laugh at yourself, not take yourself so seriously, and it's just like a pressure valve that releases, like unconstricts your stress and your heart. So
And I think there's just a camaraderie in that, and be like, okay, oh, I'm not the only one who does that. You know, I made a reel a couple weeks ago that's done well, and it was just me saying good morning to people on my runs at any time of day, you know? And I wasn't sure because I do that all the time. I'll be on the trail. But if I'm on the trail, especially, I see somebody, it's good morning because I usually run in the morning. So that's just my autopilot go-to. I didn't know if other people would relate to that. And I've had so many people be like, oh my God, I do the same thing. You know, I don't know. And I think sometimes if you can come up with an idea that's more unique, there's a freshness to it. Usually, people seem to take better to that too. Not like the same old tired jokes.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think it's almost like the more surprising that it is that like, oh, you do that too, like you also like or you know, or I do that too, like I also say good morning on my afternoon run, like then it's like it just like triggers that funny bone even harder, I guess. So really cool. Well, thanks for letting me dig into that a little bit. I think that's really interesting, just the dynamics at play of you as a content creator of funny things. So
And it's just one more thing just to add to that is like my whole idea with that is I want, my hope is that people will like watch those reels and see this whole trail ultra running thing and like realize like it's fun too. Like it's not all this, you know, like I keep going back to saying, you know, the David Goggins reels and you gotta get up every day, commit, consistency, you know, break yourself. It can just be fun. It can just be enjoyable. We can have a laugh. Like I want to promote that more to people, and hopefully maybe that brings more people wanting to like come into this world or this community of trail running. It's
for
not, we're not
sure.
all just a bunch of like hardcore people running around with our shirts off screaming at each other.
Yeah, that is super. That's a super refreshing perspective, I think. So thanks for that. So looking at kind of your past races this year, I, just like browsing your ultra sign up. And I see, just if I just look at like 2023, for example, you did the Coldwater Rumble 52 miler in January, the Crown King Scramble 50K in March, the Javelina Hangover 50K in September, Man Against Horse 50 miler in October, and Pass Mountain 50K just a couple months ago in November. And I look at that, and not just in 2023, but in years prior for the past few years, like I just think like consistency and like you just do a few in the spring, a few in the fall. Obviously in the summer it's really hard to find races in Phoenix, let alone race them. But you're just like you do a lot of some of the same races you've done repeatedly, the Crown King Scramble. But just a lot of you seem to really hit that like 50 miler to 50K distance and just at least do a few of those every year. So I guess what kind of things kind of go into your decision making when you're looking at what races to put on your calendar?
I wish there was more rhyme or reason to it. Well, so like Crown King, for instance, that was the first ultra marathon I ever did. And so I made it a goal to have that be like an annual tradition. That's why I've done it the last 3 years. I'll be doing it again in March. Like, no matter what, races I do or don't do throughout the year, I want to try to always hit like at least that one. I've been really consistent ever since that first one with like consistently training, consistently racing. I've probably been slower than I needed to be in like building up through the distances. I've done quite a few like 50Ks and a 60K. I just did my first, so Coldwater Rumble was my first 50 miler. That was this last January. And then like I said, I did another one in October. But like I have ambitions to build up. I'm racing a 100K race, Black Canyon, in next month now. And but I have ambitions to do the 100 milers, to do Tokodona 250 is something that I want to do. But I think I was probably pretty slow to like ramp up into longer distances. I had like 2 years where I really just did like the 50K distance. But as far as like rhyme or reason to it, I'm not great at like, I haven't like sat down and like planned out my races for the year. I'll put one, you know, I know I'm doing Black Canyon in February. I know I'm doing Crown King in March. And then what I'm going to do after that, I'm not sure. I know I'm going to do a 100 miler this year, hopefully in the fall or winter. Exactly which one or where it's going to be, I'm not sure yet. I usually have a big race. So like a 50 miler to me is like a big race. And after I complete that, then I'll look out to see what the next one I want to do is going to be.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I didn't, and obviously I didn't want to like say like, oh, you're only doing 50Ks and 50 milers. Like, what's the deal? I wanted to highlight that, you know, it's okay to like be quote unquote slower in that progression. I think sometimes as trail runners we think, okay, like I'm gonna do a 25K and then I'm gonna do a 50K and then I'm gonna do a 100 miler by in 6 months or in by next year or something. And like we, you know, I feel like lots of us are like always chasing that next big thing, right? But I guess it was kind of refreshing also to see that, you know, you were kind of consistently, you know, sticking to that distance. Obviously, you know, you said yourself you have aspirations to do the further distances as well. And I'm stoked to see you at Black Canyon 100K. I'm actually signed up for that one
Oh, nice.
myself. So yeah, I'll be coming down to your neck of the woods to do that one. But anyways, I just wanted to comment on that, like that, you know, it's okay to like not jump right into the 100 miler distance or whatever. So
Yeah, and I definitely did not think there was any any shade there. I just but I agree. Like I wanted to feel competent at a particular distance before I really moved up to the next one. I don't, when I, you know, run this 100K or when I run a 100 miler, I'm not under any illusion that it's going to be easy or not hard, but like I would like to be as prepared as I can and be like familiar with the distances leading up and have that like base level of experience so that maybe it's not like more miserable than it needs to be. Is the
yeah.
idea like I don't want to jump straight into a 100 mile and have a horrible experience. Like I know it's going to be tough, I know it's going to be difficult, but like I want it to mitigate that to whatever extent that I can. But at the same time, I also don't want to like drag my feet so much that it's like years and years before I get to that, till I get to that point either.
So, do you have a 100 miler in mind? Like, which one are you eyeing?
I'm waiting for them to announce it or to open registration or even announce a date. There's a race called Saddles 100 that
Okay.
they do in Prescott. Well, I say they do it. Last year was the inaugural year. So, I'm assuming they're going to do it again this year. I hope they do it again this year because that's the one that I want to do. It's in Prescott. It's got, I want to say it had like 15,000 feet of, I could be botching that number, but it had a good amount of elevation gain. It's one
Okay.
big loop, which is what I'm more interested in doing. There's like Javelina 100 here. There's at Coldwater Rumble, there's a 100 mile distance, but those are all looped courses.
Yeah.
And I'm not, that's not really what I'm into doing or want to do, or especially don't want to do for like my first 100. So like, are you familiar with Saddles 100?
No, I'm not.
So you're probably familiar with Mike Versteeg.
I'm sorry, I'm not. I'm ignorant
Oh,
to that.
okay. He's a local runner. Sorry. He's a local or local. He's in Prescott. Like he won Cocodona 250 the first year.
Okay.
So he was, this was his race and it was like his first year putting it on.
Cool.
Those, it wasn't like it was this race company or anything. It's just like him. And I think working with his sponsor. So I'm still waiting to see if they're going to do it again this year.
Awesome. Well, I for my sakes and everybody else's sakes, I hope they do so we can see on that start line. That sounds like a fun one. So,
Yeah. If not, I'll find another one to
yeah.
do, but that's the one I'm kind of holding out for.
Cool. All right. So I wanted to touch on quickly. So you are, and this podcast may come out just after voting closes for the best pacer nominee.
Oh,
So
yeah.
Ultra Signups Keep Trail Running Weird Awards, you are a nominee for the best pacer. So I understand that you paced your friend Michelle at this last race that you did in November, the Pass Mountain 50K. And the story goes that they didn't allow pacers, so you just signed up for the race on your own and ran it the whole way with her, and you guys finished in 13 hours 35 minutes, pretty much dead last, as she put it, just 90 minutes before the cutoff. So why is something like that important to you in trail running, and what kinds of those what do those kinds of experiences mean to you?
Oh man, I love that. That was probably one of my, it was probably my favorite thing that I did in trail running like all year. So, I mean, you pretty much covered it, but like Michelle, she's new to trail running and ultra running. This was her second ultra marathon. It was a 50K. I knew Michelle prior, but Michelle and I have the same coach, Kylie, you know, Kylie.
Yep.
And so Michelle had been registered for this race and she was stressing in the couple weeks before about the cutoff times. And you can't have a pacer on a 50K. Most of the time, 50K is you're not allowed a pacer. Our mutual friend Ruth Stewart, who she's not really much of a runner, but she volunteers at like every Aravaipa event, and you get race credits when you volunteer. So she just has like stacks of race credits, and she threw out the idea to me of, hey, if you would register and run this race with Michelle just to like pace her or be moral support or whatever, I will just give some of my race credits to you to cover the entry fee. So that's how I was entered into the race, basically at like no charge. And yeah, we did the whole race together. I've never been like DFL, and so I insisted Michelle cross the finish line like 5 seconds before me so that I could be the DFL. But I mean, she's, if you know Michelle or if you follow her, like she loves it. She loves this stuff. She's so passionate about it. She works so hard at it. And I love to see that. Like, and I'm always wanting to do whatever I can to support somebody in the pursuit of their goal or their dream. So if that means running a whole 50K with them just to keep them company, I'm like that. I don't know. I'm up for that. Like that fills my cup up so much. I love this so much. And when I encounter somebody else who loves it as much as I do, like I'm down to support you in whatever way I can to achieve your goal.
So cool, man. Well, shout out to Michelle and shout out to you for pacing her. And yeah, best of luck in that in the Best Pacer award. Maybe we'll have to take a little clip at least from this podcast and post it tomorrow or something before voting closes on January 5th. But so that's really cool. And I just like love that story. And it just seems to just encapsulate, you know, the spirit of trail running. Like you got your racing credits from this volunteer who had build them up, and you get to run the race and pace and be the DFL, the martyr. Yeah. that's so cool.
We had a blast, man. We had fun. I mean, we even got to some of the aid stations later on in the race, and like they were unmanned. They left food and water out for us, but like they'd gone home, so we're taking videos of ourselves raiding the aid station, just want to make it a— I didn't want her to have it be this stressful experience, I wanted to have it be this fun, awesome experience, so tried to make it that way.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
All right. I wanted to get into some of the stroller miles that you log. Just a quick question right off the bat. What's the longest run that you've done pushing a stroller?
10 miles.
Nice. It is
the longest. And that was just recently, probably 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. Yeah. That's my longest run with a stroller as well. And I think I see on your Instagram, when you are on a stroller, with a stroller, you're mostly sticking to roads or canal paths. But I just got to ask the question, do you ever take the stroller on trails or anything?
I never have. I don't know. Our trails here are, I guess, pretty technical compared to most. It'd probably be a pretty bumpy ride for my son. So yeah, when it's stroller, we stick to the road. A lot of canal miles.
Yeah, you got a single bob jogging stroller, if I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've seen that, and because we have the double, and it looks exactly the same. But I mean, they have decent like shocks and stuff and tires, but yeah, probably don't want to. It'd be pretty bumpy and honestly really hard going uphill or even down.
I don't know how beneficial that would be to me or him.
Yeah. Anyways, I just thought that might be funny if you had ever tried it or something.
But maybe that's a real idea.
There you go.
See? There you go in my notes.
There you go. Put it
I'll
down.
Credit right. You.
Oh, you don't have to do that. In fact, don't. I don't want the liability from.
Yeah.
Don't.
Look what this guy made him do to his kid.
Yeah, you got to put the "don't try this at home" on it, though. Anyways, I wanted to read just the Instagram post that you did from March 2023. So earlier, I guess it was last year now in the spring. And just bear with me for a sec. It's a little long, but it's a good one that I think really just gets the spirit of what this, what the podcast is really about. Like I could have called this podcast the Stroller Miles or something like that as well. But anyways, you said, I thought I'd have to put, and sorry, there's a picture. This is a picture of your son in the jogging stroller. And this is what you said. I thought I'd have to put my running on the back burner when my son was born. Being a new father, I didn't know what to expect. I felt like I couldn't have anything that would distract me, in quotes, from parenting. I'd assumed I'd be too busy to train for an ultra, and those are the only distances I'm interested in doing anymore. Turns out running didn't have to go on the back burner, and I'm actually getting more mileage now than I ever have. I even ran 5 trail ultras since he was born. I found out quickly that I still needed to exercise and pursue my passion. It allows me to be a more fulfilled individual, which helps me be a better better father and husband. And then in parentheses with a smiley face, I think. I also want my son to grow up with an example of someone who sets goals and works for them, someone who prioritizes physical activity, someone who finds time to pursue passion. Plus, he loves going along. I put him in a jogging stroller, and as soon as he was big enough, and we've already logged hundreds of miles together, 2 and sometimes weeks 3 of my weekday training runs are on pavement, pushing my little nose picker around. the weekends are for the mountains and the long trail runs, but most of my weekday runs look like this right now. I wouldn't trade them if I could. Having him with me and a part of this whole journey has only enriched it. We have a lot more miles to log and a lot more strollers, selfies to take. I'm sure what will feel like sooner rather than later, he'll be running along beside me. So I do my best not to take these runs for granted. So there's a lot to unpack there. And like I said, I think this post kind of is a good way to kind of wrap up our conversation and bring it back to the theme of getting your runs in when you can, how you can, you know, around the constraints, if you can call them that, of being a father, and a husband. And so I like what you said there about how you think or hope that running makes you a better husband or father. How do you think it does make you a better husband or father?
I think when I am still able to pursue something that I'm passionate about and something that fills me up, fills my cup up, I'm able to be more present, more patient, when I am at home. Like it's like the self-care thing, you know, you can't always be giving everything you have to everybody else. Eventually you won't be any good for anyone. And so having these races and having this training and having my running is a big part of my self-care. And so I look at it as when I'm taking care of myself in that way, and like I said, I'm filling up my cup, I'm much more content, which makes me, I think, a much more patient and present father and husband when I am at home.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. And I think lots of parents in general can. But I guess the question is also, like, is there ever a breaking point? You know, is there ever a point where you're running too much or spending too much time running that it actually detracts from being a quote unquote good dad or good husband?
That is always a concern of mine. Like I'm often battling that with, like, am I doing this too much? Is this too selfish? Am I taking too much time away from my family? There's a constant back and forth between that thought and then, like, what I just expressed earlier. What, you're doing something for yourself and you're exercising and this is something that makes you a better person. So, like, in a way, you are doing that for your family, but it's a constant tug of war with that. And to be honest, sometimes I'll break it down where I'll look at my week and I'll say, you spent 8 hours this week total running. So divide that by seven, a little over an hour of your day was spent running. You know, maybe there's some drive time to the trailhead and stuff, but, like, really, you're not taking these huge chunks of time all the time. Peak training weeks are tougher. I'm kind of going into that right now for Black Canyon. These next 2-3 weeks are higher volume, and I will be running more by taking Sunny in the stroller. You know, that relieves some of that guilt or selfishness that I can feel because he's with me and he enjoys it. The tough parts are, like, the long trail runs on Saturday that I could be gone for 4 or 5 hours. And so maybe for 2 or 3 weeks, it is a little unbalanced. But I think that's okay as long as I've stopped trying to look at my day to day or my week to week, regarding balance, like, on such a micro scale, and try to look at it more macro in a bigger picture. So, like, yeah, those 2 or 3 weeks are heavier, you're going to be gone more, but, like, you're going to have recovery weeks coming up, and you're going to have, you know, down weeks where you're going to be with your family more. So, like, it doesn't have to be this perfect balance every day or every week, as long as I think in the big picture, on the macro scale, it's balancing. That's okay. There's seasons for things in life, and sometimes you're in the season, if you're an ultra runner, then sometimes you're in the season of higher mileage weeks, and I think that's okay.
I think that's so true, and that's so good perspective, looking at balance as on more of a macro level than a micro level, and seasons of life, seasons of training. And another question that I had, so not just in the day-to-day, but also in the racing itself. So remind me, have you DNF'd a race before? And not to shame you again if you have or anything, but
I have not yet.
haven't. And again, like, I'm not trying to shame anybody that has DNF'd a race or anything, but I've heard, like, from family people, men and women, the motivation to not DNF a race is like, I've spent so much time like away from my family during the training, and I'm spending like this whole day like away from them, so I like can't quit. Like, is that a phenomenon in your head?
I don't know if I've ever thought about like the race day. I don't know if that's ever been like a huge motivating factor to finish. Definitely a motivating factor is like, yeah, I put in all this time and effort and training this build up. Like, I don't care if it's a great finish or if I have, if like I'm just crawling my way through this one. I want to finish it for all the time and effort I've invested. I don't know if the family part plays into that too much. I do notice myself, like, especially on these 50 milers, like by the end of it, like I'm missing my family a ton. Like, I'm usually not away from my kids for like that long. And so it makes me even more appreciative of them in that aspect. But yeah, I don't ever feel like I have to finish the race out of like to make it worth all the time I was away from my family. But now that it's in my head, maybe I will.
Yeah, I just, sorry if I just put it in your head and out there. But and I think, to be clear, I think there are times and places for DNFs. I'm not like of the opinion like no DNF at any cost or whatnot. But yeah, that's interesting. Thanks for indulging me a bit in going down that
Yeah.
hole. But so another question. So you have a newborn. When's the double jogging stroller gonna happen?
Oh man, I don't know. So like the rule of thumb is that you're supposed to wait till they're like 6 months old. That's at least that's what I read on Google. And so I waited until 6 months to take my older son in the jogger. I don't know if I can safely do it before that. Like I'd like to do it probably in another month or two before it gets too hot here. Because once the summer hits,
Yeah.
stroller miles are out the window, you know.
Yeah.
It's definitely only a fall, winter, spring thing. But I'm hoping maybe we can start getting some in the spring here before it gets too hot. But that definitely provides like the weather right now, you know, is provides a lot more flexibility with training, with being able to take them, and me being a stay-at-home dad, you know, I can kind of take them whenever it's convenient. Summertime is like 4 a.m. alarms, 5:30 start times, you know,
Right.
try to do it before everyone's awake.
Right. Well, yeah, that's cool. I'm not like, again, trying to push you into that, but just a question.
How old were your kids? You took them,
Oh,
obviously. You said you had a double.
yeah, we have five, so not all of them even fit in a double, but I think it probably got younger and younger with each kid. Like, we got more comfortable with. But as far as running with them, I don't think I probably did it before 6 months. We'd put them in a jogging stroller at probably, 6 to 8 weeks, and just walking on walks and
Walk,
stuff.
yeah.
Probably not recommended exactly, but, because the buckles don't really fit well around them. But as far as running with them, I didn't do it until probably, yeah, I guess probably 6 months. But
Yeah.
anyways, so, well, this conversation has just been a treat, Chris. I've really, really enjoyed it. And my last question for you as we wrap up here is, what mantra or saying serves as your headlamp through the dark or difficult moments of life?
Ooh. I have a couple that come to mind. Can I do a couple?
Sure, go ahead. Yeah, no rules.
One is the song lyric, and I actually have a tattoo of it, and it's "Never let your fear decide your fate." Basically, I used to give up on a lot of things, kind of going back to my drinking days. When something seemed too big, too overwhelming, too hard, I had any insecurity, any doubt that I could do it or handle it, I'd quit. I'd let that fear take over, and I would quit, and I wouldn't see it through. So, never let your fear decide your fate. It's like, even if you're unsure, even if you're scared, like push through. Another one, it's maybe like a little more stoic, but it keeps me even keel, is "Something always happens," and meaning that things are going good, it's not always going to go good. Things are going terrible, they're not always going to go terrible. And I've again, harkening back to the drinking days, when I've had multiple times in my life when I thought, like, my life is ruined. Like, this is over. I'm not, there's no going forward from this. Like, it got really bad, really dark sometimes. Yet, like, something always happens. Here I am, talking to you on a podcast with a wife with two kids, like, sober, chasing my dreams. Like, it wasn't the end. It's never the end. As long as you just like keep going, something will change. Something happens. Nothing stays the same forever. So that's one that I kind of hold on to, probably even more so, just to keep an even keel, and to just keep moving forward.
Well, those are some great words of wisdom. I love it. That's really cool. Awesome. Something always happens. Something always does happen, right? Something always works out. It's not always fun. It's not always, painless, but we do get through it, and we do move on. So that's a, I think, very wise. Well, thank you again, Chris. I really appreciate it. Really appreciate the conversation. This has been such a treat again, and I will see you at Black Canyon.
All right. I appreciate you having me on, and I look forward to meeting you in person.